So, do you remember the character Steve Urkel from the 90s hit show Family Matters?
Absolutely. Yeah,
Yeah.
Jaleel White, right?
Jaleel White, who played Steve Urkel, he made that show. And it was announced recently that Jaleel is joining the list of celebrities who have launched their own cannabis brand.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay.
So Joe wrote on his website, he said he also hopes to debunk the stereotypes associated with cannabis and to celebrate its medical breakthroughs. Barring my way into an industry not known for diversity or inclusion has been both challenging and rewarding, he said on his website. Other celebrities that have joined the cannabis industry in recent years have included Drake, Snoop Dogg, of course, and Willie Nelson. And so
Willie
Jaleel,
Nelson, really?
yeah,
I didn't know
well,
that.
yeah, but that makes sense. I mean, he's been doing hash for a long time and he looks the part. Welcome to episode 10 of Breaking It Down with DJ and Courtney.
Episode 10, we made
10, we made it,
it.
and I'm loving it. So we like to start each episode with a little segment called What's Still Cooking. It gives Courtney and me a chance to talk about things that we still lingering on our minds, that we've read, watched, or experienced. And what's still cooking for me is Sunday brunch. I had a few friends over for brunch to include Courtney. So did you enjoy yourself?
I did. I had a good time. We had great conversation,
Oh
so
yeah, it
it
was
was
a
fun.
wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed it. And I probably had too many mimosas.
I mean, I only needed one.
Yeah, someone did say it was too strong, but that's the way I like it. So, do have some bad news in the hip hop community. So, Black Rob, whose real name is Robert Ross, died Saturday, April 17th, at the age of 52. Black Rob was signed to Diddy's Bad Boy Records label and released one of my favorite hip hop songs, "Whoa," back in 2000.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and Black Rob close friend Mark Curry said Black Rob had been on dialysis for 5 years. He
Wow.
had a history of kidney issues and diabetes, and he had suffered several strokes in recent years. So ultimately, dying of kidney failure at the Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta. So shortly before Black Rob died, he shared a very sad Instagram video of himself talking about his situation. And had revealed he had no place to live. Him saying, "I've been dealing with this for 5 years," he explained. And he had had four strokes by this time. And he also included, "I don't know what to tell you, man. This stuff is crazy. This stuff is hard. I don't have a house to live in. Really, man, I need rest." And Mark Curry and producer Mark Zombie started a GoFundMe page to help with Black Rob's medical bills and housing before he passed away. So I checked the website, the GoFundMe page, and it looked like he's already accumulated $31,000 out of a $50,000 goal. And several celebrities left Instagram condolences on Black Rob's social media, Diddy being one. Diddy posted a throwback photo of him and Black Rob with the caption, "Rest in power, King. As I listen to your records, there is one thing that they have in common. You have made millions of people all over the world feel good and dance. You are one of a kind. God bless you. Love, you will be missed." But it wasn't long before criticism came aimed at Diddy. A few of the comments were, "People always show love when someone dies just for the likes." Shaking my head. "The man was homeless. Where was the love then?" And other commenters echoed that same sentiment, saying, "Hey Diddy, why did he die homeless? Excuse me, are you helping to pay for the funeral? Oh, please, you weren't worried about him when he was breathing. Go to hell." So people were very passionate about
Yeah,
that.
I mean, I know that people had been giving Diddy some criticism, and I think it's a broader conversation just about how the music industry, what what type of benefits and protection do they provide their artist? Right. So, but yeah, so.
Yeah, because some feel that Diddy has done little to help the failing careers of the artists he signed to Bad Boy Records and knowing their careers while focusing solely on his success. But Mark Curry later took to social media to inform the public that Diddy was had been reaching out to help. But my heart goes out to the Black Rob family.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then another hip hop legend passed away recently, too. Shaq G, you know, the Humpty Dance.
Yeah.
So, you know, hip hop has really been
losing a lot of icons.
Yeah. Been heavy hit. Well, I just had one thing that was cooking for me. I saw that there had been an accident involving a Tesla vehicle near Houston, and two men were killed in a Tesla Model S, but nobody was behind the wheel. So, you know, that whole autopilot, auto drive. It looks like there's going to be some regulation coming because there's going to be an investigation.
Right.
So I just thought that was, you know, really interesting. It made me think of iRobot. This is why I'm like, I'm not going for no auto driving cars. It's not for me.
I don't want to pay that kind of money to die.
Exactly. Well, that was it.
Yeah. So we are at our first main topic for the week. So I first saw this story and I didn't want to break it down, because it's yet another sad story that reflects the continuous problem that has plagued America for many, many years. Mm-hmm. But a problem needs to be continually discussed until we see the changes needed. So on the afternoon of April 20th, a Columbus police officer arrived to a chaotic altercation outside of Angela Moore's home. Officer Nicholas Ridden, who's white, fatally shoots 16-year-old Micaiah Bryan, who's African American, killing her. So body camera footage from Officer Reardon, who shot Micaiah, shows her wielding a knife and lunging it towards another person wearing the color pink before Officer Reardon shoots her four times, killing Micaiah Bryant in the driveway of her aunt's home, who was at work.
Yeah. You said you didn't want to read this story. What turned you off about the story? I mean, it seems pretty obvious, but.
Well, upon hearing it, I knew the media would flock to this story like flies on horse crap. But then I began hearing more about the details of the story. I felt this story was different. I saw how the media was trying to present the story as another piece of the Black Lives Matter narrative. Mm-hmm. And I see it as a possible threat to the Black Lives Matter movement.
Really?
Yeah, I see it.
How and why?
I see it as a threat because there are many victims of police brutality out there. And while right now, the media is placing a spotlight on the injustices of the law enforcement community, but for about another 5 minutes. But that time needs to be taken to reflect and spotlight incidents that shows blatant disregard for upholding the law by law enforcement. And this, I don't think, is a blatant disregard for the law that this police officer is displaying.
Wait, so you think the police officer was justified in shooting and killing Micaiah Bryant?
So I can't say if Officer Reardon was justified in shooting Micaiah and, well, shooting and killing her. I can say that the reason why I say shooting and killing Micaiah, because the reason he shot four times was because the intent was to kill Micaiah, not to simply restrain her from stabbing the other person. So to me, he should have shot her to restrain her.
So you thought that he should have shot her?
Yes, she could have shot her in the leg. He could have tased her. But shooting her four times let me know that he was intending to kill her.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't understand why you think then this is a threat to the Black Lives Matters movement.
Because normally, if Well, I'm gonna look at it from the girl in pink perspective. She's about to be stabbed to death. Well, I don't know if she would have been stabbed to death or not, but she's about to be stabbed. Would you want that officer to shoot her, shoot that Micaiah to stop you from being stabbed?
No, not at all. If anything,
Well,
there were other things that. So this is my problem with the whole thing. There's a couple of things that you said that I got a problem with. I will agree that the things that have happened after this incident are problematic. But what actually happened is a problem because from the footage, I see no efforts from the officer to de-escalate. He yelled a couple of times, but there are other people in this scene. I don't know why it was necessary for him to use lethal force. There was no reason for him to even pull out his gun. He could have used his body to intervene. He didn't try to do that. He didn't use a taser. You know, like there was no real effort to protect anybody in this scene. So, you know, with the way that he shot and shooting four times, he could have shot the girl in pink. I don't think there was any effort to protect in this effort. And then going back to my other point about the things that have happened afterwards, I don't think that this case, this incident deters the Black Lives Matter movement because the issue is still the same. The issue is the police and the way they police in this country creates a health risk for Black and Brown bodies. And that has not changed. It doesn't matter the circumstance, the way that the police, the way that they exert their power and abuse their power creates a health risk for Black bodies. So the fact that people are not focusing on that is the issue that I think is happening right now.
Well, I don't know all the intricate facts surrounding the story, but neither George Floyd nor Dante Wright was wielding a weapon with the intent of attacking another person when they were killed by the police. You know, and a few just quick facts. So Columbia officers, well, Columbus officers aren't allowed to use, are allowed to use deadly force to protect someone if the officer feels another person is in danger of being killed. And tasers are generally reserved for situations where there is no immediate threat of death. And Columbus officers are not required to call out that they are going to fire a weapon, though they try to do that if there's time. So there's some
And
of the
that I
basic.
think is problematic.
That those are laws, those are the laws
Yeah,
that
like
they
that's a
have.
problem. Yeah, but continue. You had some other facts, right?
So those are three facts, but I did want to go into more details about the situation. So
Okay.
the first 911 call that brought the police to the house came at 4:32 p.m. on Tuesday. As of now, the person's identity is still unclear. Micaiah's family says it was Micaiah that made the phone call, but the police have not verified if that's true or not. The caller is screaming on the call, saying someone is trying to stab us and had put hands on my grandmother. The dispatcher asks again and again whether the call has been has the person who's, I guess, you know,
Making the
attacking
call.
has any weapons. And the caller responds, just we need the police officer here now. And then a second call came, but they hung up because the police had already arrived at that particular time. So you know, we do have questions about who was the girl making the call. I mean, the family is saying it was Micaiah. The police
Yep.
is, haven't confirmed if that's the case or not. But as I begin to listen to the story, and I begin to find out that Micaiah is a foster child living in her aunt's home. I went, okay, well, let me see, can I find more information about Micaiah, who Micaiah is?
I don't think that that's relevant. I don't think that's important. And I'm really frustrated that people are doing that because one, it feels like the effort is to vilify her and make it seem that it was justified that she would be murdered. And here's the issue. Even though she had a weapon, that doesn't mean that the police have the right to murder her. There are several times that white people have had weapons and have been secured by the police, weapons even attacking the police, like aimed at the police, and they still have their lives. They're still around to tell it. So again, the issue is the attack of police against Black and brown bodies. Mm-hmm. And these distractions of, well, why was she in a foster home? And why does she mm-hmm. have a knife? All of those things take away the focus on what the real issue is.
Well, I think the media is going to dig into this. And I'm interested, too. I mean, that's the truth. But I did find that the aunt Angela Moore divulged that Micaiah had moved into her home on February 14th and that Micaiah was one of the three foster children living there, including Micaiah's sister. Mm-hmm. And Micaiah's mother, Paula Bryant, who works as a nursing assistant in Columbus, has been working towards a reunion, is what Paula said, trying to get her daughters back. And the reason why I think something about that sounds to be a bit off to me is because that makes me wonder what kind of environment was Micaiah and her sister living in previously.
Those with types their mother. Of questions, again, mm-hmm. I feel like are attempts to take away her humanity. And those types of questions aren't important. And it's really mm-hmm. disappointing to me how mm-hmm. Black men especially are usually mm-hmm. the ones that are asking these questions when it happens to a Black woman. Like, I don't really have... Absolutely. I feel like Black women are always defending Black men. And when Black women need protection or whatever, Black men aren't there.
That's scathing, you know, that to say that Black men, and you know, I have to say that some of that rings true, but all Black men know. But these are still important questions. Oh my gosh,
you did not just, not all Black men. Well, clearly I'm not talking about all Black men, but there is a big majority mm-hmm. that, why is that even an issue? Like I said, the true problem here mm-hmm. is the police. Mm-hmm. When George Floyd was murdered, mm-hmm. people wanted to talk about his past and talk about all of that. We centered the conversation on what we saw, right? Mm-hmm. And what we saw in the video from the officer that murdered Micaiah is that the officer showed up, asked no questions, pulled his gun, and murdered Micaiah. Why does all of these other factors have anything to do with it?
They did ask questions about.
He didn't ask any questions. He didn't ask any questions.
Not the officer. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. But the officer is the one who had the gun.
But I'm just saying the who Micaiah Bryant is, as this moved forward through the media, through the cycle.
She was a Black woman. She was a Black child who deserved mm-hmm. to live. She was a Black child who was in danger. I believe mm-hmm. that she did call the police and she deserved to be protected. And it seems like, she was doing everything that she could to protect herself. So who was mm-hmm. there to protect her? And now who are these, who, and so it seems like no one, even in her death, mm-hmm. is protecting her. Because these questions, that's not mm-hmm. protecting her. It's not.
Well, it's a possibility that she is the aggressor.
I don't think so.
We don't know all the
details. What I do know yet. Is this. I do know mm-hmm. is this. I saw this was posted on social media yesterday.
Okay.
Again, it's posted on social media, so it has to still be verified. But mm-hmm. LaShondra Tinsley posted, FYI, I went to the memorial yesterday and spoke with Micaiah Bryant's family and friends. Those girls, one was a 28-year-old adult, had come to Micaiah Bryant's foster home 3 days in a row, trying to fight her. The foster mom is the one who had the girls come fight Micaiah, claiming she was unruly. Everyone in the entire house was against Micaiah. And when her father came, she finally felt safe enough to come out and fight. Imagine a 15-year-old thinking process of having to fight a 28-year-old and others, and her own foster mother calling to have her beat up. Micaiah's little sister is the one who made the 911 call. 3 days straight, all by herself. I'm sure Micaiah was extremely scared, but felt she had to be brave and protect herself by any means necessary. This information hasn't come out in the media just yet, but mm-hmm. if the investigation is done properly and there's transparency, you will hear all about it. Had the cop tased her or simply mm-hmm. attempted to stop her from stabbing the girl, he could have found out. And that's why he, along with the foster mother and all adults involved, are at fault. And that's all I have to say about that.
Well, if that's the situation, that's true, and that's what eventually comes out as the facts, then yeah, that's very sad. But still, it doesn't answer the question of if her father came to visit her, then why isn't he having custody of his own daughter? You know?
That doesn't matter. This is the issue. This is the issue. And this is going to be my breakdown because we need to wrap up the segment. This is my breakdown. Micaiah's life mattered. And the way that policing is done in this country, if we even look at to the history of why the hell we even have police, you can recognize that it is not to protect or value black and brown bodies. And that is the only thing that we need to be talking about. Talking about all of these cursory issues about if this or then or whatever, what that does is that places blame on Micaiah and Micaiah's circumstances. And that is not solving the problem. The problem is the way that police is done and how quickly they are to murder black and brown bodies. Reason or not, that is a problem. So what's
Well,
your breakdown?
my breakdown is this is another example of an adequate law enforcement training, and another reason why law enforcement training reform is so needed. We already know in similar altercations involving white people, the police respond differently.
Absolutely.
So I'm glad to hear that the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigations is conducting a third-party investigation to get answers because because I just don't feel like this is a George Floyd and a Dante Wright situation. But I do know this, that if there was no George Floyd, this would be an open and case, open and shut case situation. You know, there'd be no any questions about Micaiah. Police shot her, she had a knife in her hand, case closed. But because of George Floyd, he died, and that whole situation, we are asking questions in a way that we haven't asked questions before about these kinds of situations, and that's a good thing. My beef is with the media is, as of now, they're classifying this story as another George Floyd incident, and I feel that it just isn't. Anytime you go wielding a knife in the street and with the intention of stabbing another person, it's just not going to end well for you. But I'm sure there's more to the story than what's being currently reported, and I still can't wait to find out what those details are, so that we don't, so Micaiah doesn't get vilified. But if it's the case, it's the case. I still have a ton of questions about the circumstances around the situation, and what would have happened if Officer Reardon didn't stop Micaiah Bryant from stabbing the girl who was wearing pink. So I also want more details about the female who was wearing the pink outfit and who was about to be stabbed. And I want to know about the guy who kicked the girl in the head and the girl who got kicked in the head. So there's a lot of questions that I have. So do you remember the character Steve Urkel from the 90s hit show Family Matters?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jaleel White, right?
Jaleel White, who played Steve Urkel, he made that show. And it was announced recently that Jaleel is joining the list of celebrities who have launched their own cannabis brand.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay.
So Joe wrote on his website, he said he also hopes to debunk the stereotypes associated with cannabis and to celebrate its medical breakthroughs. Barring my way into an industry not known for diversity or inclusion has been both challenging and rewarding, he said on his website. Other celebrities that have joined the cannabis industry in recent years have included Drake, Snoop Dogg, of course, and Willie Nelson. And so
Willie
Jaleel,
Nelson, really? I
yeah,
didn't know
well,
that.
yeah, you know, but that makes sense. I mean, he's been doing hash for a long time and he looks the part. So Jaleel is partnering with 710 Labs on his new line called It's Purple, and it launched in California on April 20th in lieu of 420,
420, right?
and it includes variants of the cannabis strain Purple Urkel.
Purple Urkel,
Purple
wow.
Urkel origins are believed to stem from the select phenotype called Mendocino Purps, while the essence is a blend of cannabis, berry, and fresh grapes.
Interesting.
So the effects of purple Urkel is said to be deeply relaxing, sleep-inducing, full-body pain relief, and offers a perfect nighttime option to rest if you're suffering from insomnia.
Oh, wow. So that's probably an indica. So he needs to have another strain that's like the Stefan Urkel, which could be a sativa. Remember when he would put himself through his transformation and he'd be cool and he wasn't, Steve Urkel? So he needs to, once he branches out, he should get another strand that's a sativa, that's Stefan Urkel.
Like Laura, try my purple Urkel.
Did I do that?
Did I do that? I was high.
That's
So,
great. Cool.
yeah.
All right, well, let's move into the next segment.
Okay.
Well, DJ, you just really set up this next segment so wonderfully for me. So I wanted to talk about 420, actually, because, last week was 420. For those who don't know, that is the police code for marijuana. And so on April 20th, all of the people who, not all, but I guess, people who participate, celebrate.
Who partake?
And, more states in the United States have been legalizing recently. And I was just curious, it's not, I know it's not legal in Virginia yet, but what have you noticed, if anything, about like society and culture since more states have begun legalizing?
I think that I've seen more African Americans are more open to smoke weed publicly, you know. And I say publicly, but I think I like I said I know you mentioned this before about you can smell it all over the place now.
Oh yeah.
But
Oh yeah.
yeah.
My bedroom, like I think there's someone in one of the buildings nearby. My bedroom is always like I feel like I get a contact high, especially if I can there's a waker and baker in my there's a wake and bake somewhere. So if I sleep in too long, I'm gonna get a contact high when I get up in the morning in DC,
Well, currently there are 9 states that have legalized, I guess, reduced restrictions on marijuana, to include Washington, D.C. So it's beginning to get more, I think, accepted. I'm seeing it more on television. I'm seeing it more in sitcoms. I'm seeing that weed is being more so more involved in pop culture in a way that it hasn't been before.
I mean, even on 420, I got an alert from Uber Eats, like giving me a discount code to order something in case I got the munchies, So like it's clearly becoming more normalized. But one of the reasons why I wanted to bring it up is that it feels like everyone doesn't get to play. So I saw this story about Chicago. I remember I was in Illinois when it was released that they were going to legalize marijuana. But I think last year was the first year it was actually legalized. However, 3 times the number of African Americans were arrested for marijuana related offenses in Chicago than any other ethnicities combined in 2020. And so it seems like everybody's not getting a chance to play in this legalization. I mean, some of the reasons that legalization were to happen is to ameliorate the imbalances in the justice system, but it doesn't look like that's happening in Chicago.
Right. So do you say not when you say doesn't get a chance to play, are you referring to black people not being able to open their own marijuana dispensaries?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like in the article that I found, and we can link the article in the show notes. It's like on the north side, white people are having their dispensaries and they're having this like luxurious experience with enjoying cannabis. But on the south side, one, there are more arrests, and with more arrests, that prevents you from being able to participate because if you're a felon, you're not able to participate in the industry.
So, there's a racial bias, and let's be clear. My marijuana has been demonized for years by the government. I become an African American owned marijuana dispensary, you're going to literally put a target on your
You
back
think so?
by the police, by the government, by portions, even by the portions of the black community who feels that smoking weed is a infernal activity. Now, let me remind you, the states that border Illinois, Kentucky, Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri, India, and no, India
Indiana.
has been India, yeah, Indiana, which is Minneapolis, which houses Minneapolis, where we're having all these issues. So we call Chicago the Midwest, but Chicago was a part of the Mississippi Great Migration,
That's right.
which many African Americans migrated to Chicago in the hopes of upward mobility and to escape the harsh reality of the Jim Crow mentality, which existed in the Deep South, which is Mississippi. Unfortunately, that Deep South mentality
Is still in
also
Chicago.
wasn't too far behind them.
That's right. Yeah, so it's interesting because I think Family Matters was set in Chicago, right?
Oh, which I thought it was San Francisco, but I could be wrong.
I could be wrong too. I don't remember, but I thought they were in the Midwest.
I thought I saw
Maybe
the
not.
row houses back. The row houses was a
In
big
Family
deal in San
Matters?
Francisco. And Family Matters. I thought Family Matters and also that show that had the Olsen twins.
Yeah,
I
that one's
thought,
in San Francisco, but I thought Family
okay.
Matters was someplace else. But I don't know.
I thought they
I'll
was in the
Google
same
it.
city.
I'll Google it. No, I think they were. I mean, they came on the same night, but I think they were in different
Maybe I
cities.
got them running together in my mind or something.
But so like even there's a double standard. So we acknowledge there's a double standard. And in the article, there's a line that says, at the same time that the state's legal weed industry is making millions and white smokers are enjoying this boutique experience with designer weed and clean, fashionable North Side dispensaries, black and brown people are left out of the windfall and they continue to be arrested for selling weed illegally. So again, I think you're right. I think that black weed smokers are targeted, but they also don't have the opportunity to experience the same thing that white smokers get to do. You know, one, there aren't as many dispensaries where black people are living in Chicago. And like I said, there were so many people that were arrested before it was legal who are now not able to participate, you know, so they're not even able to open a dispensary or things like that. So say you live in Chicago and you participate. Are you gonna go all the way to the North Side to get your weed and then come all the way back to where you're living? And even
No,
if you were to
no.
do that, you would probably purchase more than what's legally, you know, available because who's going to make those types of trips? But here's the other thing. So this is what I want to do. I want to know if the goal was really to decriminalize the substance, because clearly it's not an issue about marijuana being unsafe. It was always about how do we make a profit? How do we tax the substance, right? So now that they found a way to do that, how can they not also find a way to make it so that Black people can participate, right? You're a career coach. I'm sure you've seen like programs for returning citizens to enter the job force. You know, there are efforts being made to do that. How come there can't be efforts to be made to help Black people participate in this lucrative business?
Yeah, because I think you said it earlier about this isn't about black people, about getting black people involved. It's not about making black people business owners in terms of marijuana. It's not about reducing the number of African American men who are arrested for small crimes. So it's not about this. It's about, as you see, it's about to appease white people enjoy this herb, and they are making it easier for them to enjoy it. That's it.
Well, it's well, the case in Chicago has made that very clear. You know, advocates really need to pay attention to that because it is a lucrative business. I'm happy to hear that Jaleel White is participating, but I think there are, you know, I'm curious about how many people are still behind bars serving time for
Small crimes.
marijuana related offenses when white people are having the time of their lives now. And then, you know, even looking at Illinois, so we talked about, I don't remember which episode, how the reparations in Evanston, Illinois, their program started.
Yeah, the
But,
second episode.
oh, okay. No, that wasn't
Okay.
the second episode. We just talked about that recently. We'll put it
Okay.
in the show notes. We'll link it in the show notes.
Okay.
But anyways, but that program, the reparations program in Evanston, is partially funded by the revenue generated from marijuana sales. So they're creative enough to use the funds to support Black people. But how much more could they support Black people if they were able to have Black people generate their own wealth, you know, by being able to participate legally?
Yeah. I want to say, you know, you can do your breakdown now, or I can do my breakdown.
Yes, go ahead. Break it down.
Okay. So I want to say, Black folks, is this thing going? America has a long-standing history of hypocrisy, and the U.S. history shows that time and time again that America laws, you know, will create laws to change policy, but they have not changed their mentality along with those policies, and that's what I mean by hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, Republican Steve Alford, a member of the Kansas House of Representatives, explained this during a meeting was, what you really need to do is go back into the 30s, and when they outlaw all types of drugs, including Kansas, across the U.S., one of the reasons why is because African Americans, due to their character and makeup and their genetics, is the reason why, you know, they cannot legalize marijuana. So you know that's the mentality. Go ahead.
That is not hypocrisy. I will say this. Black people, are you listening to me? Are you listening to me? Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? This country was not made. The laws in this country were not made for us to thrive.
No, it was not.
So we need to move and act in this country with that awareness. And we need to, you know, like, there are things that we can do to make change that's going to benefit us as a people. But don't accept the okie doke. Just don't. No. Like, it's not even about hypocrisy. It's about it working the way that it was designed.
Yeah, because in Public Enemy said, can't trust it.
That's
back
right,
in the 90s.
Trust it. Can't trust it. That's right. All right.
All right. So let's move into the Inspire segment as a way to end the show on a high note, no pun intended.
High. Mm-hmm.
High note. But I saw this news I was really excited about because I was a fan of Jeopardy when Alex Trebek was the host. Rest in peace. And I know they have been doing this thing with having guest hosts. So they haven't picked a new permanent host. But I saw a petition a while ago, and I believe I signed it, where viewers wanted to have LeVar Burton of Reading Rainbow and Star Trek be the host. And he is going to be a guest host.
Yay.
And he wants to be the host. So I'm really hoping that once he gets on there and people see how great he is, that he will become the new permanent host. Mm-hmm. But I'm really proud. It was the petition that made it happen. So petitions do work sometimes. So I just thought that was really inspiring.
He does have some competition, though.
Yes, you know, he does.
Katie Couric, Dr. Oz, Anderson Cooper, even George Stephanopoulos have been some are slotted to actually be on the show.
Robin Roberts too, I think.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Burton would be there July 26th through July 30th.
Awesome! I can't wait. I can't wait. I love him. I loved him from Reading Rainbow, and who's also in Roots. You know, like, he's just great. I think he would be great for Jeopardy.
I would like that those sun visors are those visors he would wear as Lieutenant Commander. Star Trek, you know. Yeah. So anybody can teach me how to read and also wear cool glasses. You got me sold.
Well, you know me. I'm the reader, so I loved Reading Rainbow. So I'm excited to see LeVar Burton on Jeopardy.
Yeah.
And that is episode 10.
Yes, yes.
We did it.
We did it. You know,
we do have an announcement, right?
Yes, I
do. So, everyone, you've made it this far. And next week we have...
So, we have a surprise guest next week. And I'm looking forward to it. Our first guest.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm so excited. So if you're listening this week, if you've made it this far into the show, be sure to come back and listen next week. And in the meantime, you can reach out to us on social media. We are on Instagram at Breaking It Down Show, Facebook at Breaking It Down Podcast. And for those who aren't on social and you want to send us an email, how can they do that, DJ?
Send your email to breakingitdownshow@gmail.com. Again, that's breakingitdownshow@gmail.com.
Yeah. Thank you so much for everyone who's been listening. I've been receiving some text messages. Someone even said that our last episode was our best one yet. So
oh, wow.
If you guys haven't watched, be sure to catch up and we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. Breaking It Down with DJ and Courtney is edited and produced by Designs by Courtney H. Music produced by Courtney Hinton. Thank you for listening.
Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review.